welcome, welcome. Welcome, one and all, to the Center Ring, your professional gaming podcast. Maybe even your favorite one. I don't know. I can't control what you think. Episode 13 is about to happen to seduce your ear holes. So buckle up, buckaroos, because we have a show.
That's awkward. Ear holes.
Look, you don't have to think about it.
Anyway.
They're holes in their ears. I am Tim. You can find me on Twitter at Pirate Mushroom. The voice you heard across the table from me is Brandon. You can find him at
Brand Any New. I'm just going to make it as long as possible.
There you go. No shame in that, because our show Twitter is quite long, and you can find us at The Center Ring on Twitter. Tweet the show your thoughts, your hopes, your dreams, your fears. We're here for you. We can talk. We have a pretty awesome show for you today, if I do say so myself. It is going to be a day late, but it's not like any of you really cared that much since no one said anything about it.
I even tweeted it out, like, apologizing, and nobody... Come on, people. I wanted to say sorry to your face, and you didn't respond to me.
It just shows where we're at on the totem pole, right? It keeps us in check is all. But, you know, sometimes life gets in the way, and you have to push things back for things you don't get paid for. And that's that's one of them. Priorities, dog. We have an awesome show, though. We are talking about Summit 4, some Dota 2 action, some, you know, we're not all Counter-Strike here. We like Counter-Strike. We focus on Counter-Strike, but we're not all Counter-Strike. We do dip our toes into other waters. And this is the episode for you. So we have Summit 4. I want to talk a little bit about developers' accountability, their responsibility, whatever word you want to throw in there. I want to have an actual discussion about where we feel their accountability lies with their respective games, professional scene, and things like that. I feel like we can have a pretty good discussion on that, so I definitely want to jump in there. Of course, we will end the show with the micro. We have tons of stories and things we want to get to, and we just don't have the time for it, and so we squeeze it into one ending segment where everything is there in the micro for you. Good times. And we will start the show off today, though, with that game you love called Counter-Strike. Because there was a big old tournament this weekend, like nothing else. You know, they have a tournament every weekend. But I am talking about the ESL Pro League Season 2. Season 2 ended for the ESL Pro League. Some storylines worth mentioning. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on it, because by the time people are listening to this, it's going to be old news. But there's some things worth, I think, just discussion points. Looking at it top to bottom, CLG, Conquest, Luminosity, Team Liquid all failed to make it out of groups.
Again,
it's only an 8 tournament, you know, finals. So it's not like there's a whole lot of wiggle room on there. I mean, you kind of go in there with your favorites, but essentially that's, again, no North American team if we're including Luminosity in the North American discussion, which I feel like the Counter-Strike community does that now, right? They're lumped in there.
For
the sake of discussion.
Well, the only reason we lump them in there is because they're better than the rest of the NA teams.
Okay, but either way, none of them made it out of groups.
Yeah,
no one from this side of the Atlantic made it out of groups.
No, that's actually kind of embarrassing. I'm looking at the results right now, and yeah.
Not one.
Ouch.
And every time this happens, I tell myself, you know, it's all Counter-Strike. There's no difference. It's whatever. It's not, it's a video game. It doesn't matter where you're at. But for whatever reason, there is definitely an issue, an underlining issue somewhere in the left of the Atlantic scene.
I was talking about this the other day. I don't understand how we can have so many people that play these games and be so awful at them.
I had a friend ask me the other day at work, because I was kind of talking to him about esports and just saying, hey, you know, if you want to talk about it, I'm here. And he was like, well, you know, in Counter-Strike, Europe, you know, Europeans, they kind of dominate the scene there. Again, we'll say right of the Atlantic, because you have some things that aren't actually in Europe, like Russians and stuff, but whatever. We're not here to be geographically correct. We have North Americans, which is to the left on the map, and then Europeans, which is on the right side of the map. That's how we do it. And I said, he asked, he was like, what esports are Americans good at?
One.
And are we, so Dota?
That's it.
And are we even good at that, or we just have a top team?
No, EG's really good.
Well, I like, know EG's really good.
Oh, we have just the one top team.
Exactly.
Yeah, we have one top team, yeah.
EG is really good, but the 9 other teams behind them are not American. So I was like, well, you have Dota, and that's something to look forward to, I guess. And you know, you have some presence in Smash with Hbox and Mango.
Well, they're still dominated by Europeans.
Yeah, even then you have guys like Armada who, you know, swoop in there, and it's a lonely world for us North American esport viewers, but really not a whole lot there. I mean, you had Luminosity, kind of a disappointing finish from where they've been performing. CLG was disappointing enough to where they felt the need to relieve FNS of his duties, or, you know, as they say in the esports world, he steps down from the team.
They at least got, I mean, esports is at least has that political correctness already down.
It's a lower body injury.
Yeah.
Look, don't worry about what it is. It's a lower body injury.
Well, to be fair, though, they don't need to feed the drama machine. It's already in full effect, so.
This is true. So, and after the tournament, Shazam for On Conquest tweeted out a little, I feel like it was a tongue-in-cheek tweet, where saying, like, I don't have it in front of me, but it was basically hinting that there was going to be an NA shuffle happening real soon, where all these teams are going to start releasing NA players, and everybody's going to kind of shuffle around to different teams and everything there, and there's going to be a big mix-up and a shake-up in the NA scene. I was kind of hoping it was going to happen before today's show, but I haven't heard anything come down the line.
The CLG moves.
Well, yeah, okay. So, well, and that's
it. That's all I've seen so far.
Slowly, people feel like it's setting in motion. Cloud9 hasn't really
done anything.
I mean, they're playing right now, and they haven't really announced who their fifth guy is. You had Mo substitute on Liquid for a round, or a map, whatever you want to say, where he actually performed really well. For Mo, for being a sub, he performed really well.
Did you see the video?
I did. Yes, it was awesome, where he was walking down the street.
It'll be in the show notes. Please watch it.
So check out those show notes on our website, tcr.gg, for any visual reference that we bring up in the show. Or you can check it out on YouTube when we decide to put it up. So you have all that, where Mo actually did make a pretty good statement. I feel like he turned a lot of people who only know Mo as a streamer, and an annoying one at that,
yeah,
to actually kind of appreciate him. And now there's talks of maybe, you know, Cloud9 has an opening.
I can really appreciate him when he's not just screaming at the camera.
Exactly. So I think he made a pretty good statement on why he should be in the pro scene. And I think it probably piqued his interest, right? I mean, he got a taste of it. He got a taste of what it was like being in the limelight again. So I think by, because really, as far as Counter-Strike goes, the tournament season is done for anything that matters. You have the road to Vegas going on right now, but
that they're doing the closed qualifiers, but I mean, it's only done for like 2 or 3 weeks.
Well, until, right, but it's a month. I mean, you basically have a month of quote unquote off season for Counter-Strike Go right now.
Yeah.
So if there was going to be a shuffle, you would think it would be in this next week and have 3 weeks to prep for 2016, because you have ESL seasons done. Face it, they just did theirs. So all these guys are, all their seasons are ending. So it's time to where you want to make that move. What I'm curious is with NA teams, are they going to dip into the European talent? There is no rules anywhere that states that you have to be from the same, you know, like country or anything like that. You don't have to share the same blood to be on this team. And I feel like people are always talking about, oh, well, let's see who can fit in an NA team. And they look at top pro North American players. And you don't necessarily have to be there. And even if there is a small language gap, a call out's a call out, right? I mean, a ramp is a ramp. You don't really have to know conversational English to do call outs.
My whole deal with bringing European players over, and I think it's a great idea, but you have to do it a specific way. If you talk to anybody, Scoots has talked about it a lot. Thorin goes on and on about it. If you talk to people about the way North American Counter-Strike players like prepare and practice it's not very efficient. Like they want to play to win the scrim. They don't care about working on certain strats. They want to do whatever it takes to win, even though it's going to cause them to lose later on.
Well, maybe that's why they need that European influence, though.
Well, so my thing is like, if you're going to bring in a European player, it's got to be somebody like the recently available
Alu.
Like Alu. Or
you really need like a presence in there to like take control.
Somebody that is so good that everybody else says, all right, I should probably listen to this guy. He kind of knows what's going on. Like if you look at Winter Fox that tried to do the mesh a bunch of players from different places, I mean, Pith is pretty good, but he wasn't enough to take a team over and lead it. And we see where Winter Fox is at. They have a really sweet room from Steel Series in Chicago, and that's about it, which is more than I've got, but I'm just saying they're not, you know.
So we don't have to compare them to us. let's compare apples to apples here.
So if someone is going to bring in a top European talent, they either need to sit their players down and say, you guys don't know what you're doing, this person does, or they have to bring in somebody that's so good, everybody automatically respects what they do.
And maybe there's something to this also, because if you're moving, I mean, across the planet for the sake of conversation, it's a big, I mean, there's more to just the game at that point, right? To move a European over here, it's more than a game. I mean, there's no family, friends, things that you're used to,
yeah,
things like
no
that.
Support
I mean,
net at all.
Yeah, the support system's very, it would almost have to be like when, if you are familiar, listener, to where the Washington Capitals decided to go for Ovechkin, and they knew going in that this was an 18-year-old Russian who has really never been outside of Russia, and they had to cater him like a baby, and not like in a disrespectful way, but like saying, hey, we are taking this guy and we're moving him to unknown territory with no support system. We need to be that support system. I feel like teams with gaming houses have that availability. So where if Cloud9 ever pulls the trigger to get that gaming house, I think it would make it a little bit more enticing, A, for their sales pitch, right? I mean, when you're trying to recruit a player and you say, hey, we have a house for you, don't worry about it. And it would probably be a little bit more enticing from the player's perspective of, you know, hey, don't worry, fam. I can go over here and have a place. I have a roof over my head. I don't have to, you know, it's kind of part of the contract.
It's funny you brought the gaming house thing up. I mean, during the ESL, ESEA Pro League, I really wish there's already two acronyms in there, but that's a really long title. Anyway, during the broadcast, Sean Garris mentioned that NA doesn't boot camp a whole lot because apparently there's too many egos involved. And once they start living together for longer than 2 weeks, there's a lot of issues that come up. And I don't know if a gaming house is necessarily the answer. I mean, anytime you put five guys and you put them in a room together and you say, not only do you have to play 8 hours of Counter-Strike in a stressful situation where you're trying to learn new things or do new things, but you also have to like take out the trash and
actually
do the dishes,
care of the house,
and yeah,
have responsibilities.
Like, I totally agree they would have to make it completely as easy as possible for the European player, but I don't think sticking them in a gaming house is ideal. And I don't know if there's an NA team that can bankroll the kind of move we're talking about.
Well, and at the same time, too, because we're only talking about convincing him to come over here.
Right.
We're not talking about convincing them to just go to another European team that's already maybe a step or two ahead of what's already in NA.
Yeah.
Because we haven't even brought up the top half of this tournament, which was kind of on purpose, because I feel like been there, done that. When you have TQM, former TSM, who still have not found a sponsor yet, and I don't think they will until the new year. I don't think they're too concerned about it. Or if you want to call them Question Denmark. I heard that one on Reddit. That was pretty clever. I liked it. So you have former TSM and Envious. They ended up coming in third and fourth. Look, it doesn't matter what name you want to stick on TSM. They're not making it out of semis. So it's the same five guys, right? So however you want to skin the cat, It's TSM. It's the same five. And they have to get over this hump. I feel like they always have the worst luck in the semis, though, going up against like Fnatic or, you know, Luminosity when they're on fire. Yeah, they just have terrible luck.
If you want to be a top team, you got to be a top team. You got to show up when it counts.
Well, and it's that's very true. And I guess, like, is it bad luck when you're meeting a top team in the semifinals, right? That's not really luck. Like, they're there for a reason, too.
Yeah, but if you can eliminate them, then you don't have to worry about them the next round.
Yeah, so they ended up losing to Semis and Fnatic 2-1. They didn't even win a map there. Same thing, Na'Vi beat Envious 2-0. They completely swept there. So yet again, we had a finals, a best of five between Fnatic and Na'Vi. It was an amazing best of five.
It was an amazingly long best of five, too.
Yeah, you know, I like the best of five for the sake of drama, but when I can watch the first two maps, do some running around, and come home, and it's still going on,
yeah,
maybe a little too long, right?
When I sat down to watch the VOD, I was like, all right, I don't think I have like 5 hours
right
now. I was
going to say, best of five, I mean, they warn you it could take 90 minutes per match before you do a matchmaking, so, and that's without pauses and strategic, almost like commercial timeouts, so it's, yeah. We were looking at 6-7 hours by the time that was over, so that's rough, and I don't see how the players do it.
Counter-Strike, the games were great, though. Yeah, the games were amazing.
Well, I mean, you had Fnatic take the first two maps, and then Na'Vi in game three, up against it, ended up dominating on Mirage. I think Fnatic only took six on that. But alas, Fnatic ended up winning their third straight tournament with Dennis, which I read an article earlier today where it was like, oh, Fnatic is back. I still make this argument that Fnatic never left. They were never like a down team. Like, how good of a team do you have to be to where being only top three and not top two in the world is considered like your slump?
You want
to
hear a fun stat? This came from Thorin. JW, Flusha, Olfmeister, and Krims, aka Fnatic, the core Fnatic, won 12 international trophies in 2015, two of them majors. Nips, best ever in 2013, was 9. Fnatic has won more international tournaments than Nip did, and Nip is, you know, the team. Like,
and keep in mind, that's through what's some considered was a slump of a year. Like, they had a slump while blowing out the competition and breaking records.
Yeah.
So let's pump the brakes on this whole, like, oh my God, they have Dennis and they're back. Because they really, I mean, they didn't go anywhere, right? Pronax, yes, he is good. Obviously, he was replaceable. So, and that's not like trying to be disrespectful, but clearly when one man leaves the team and then the team doesn't even miss a beat and possibly gains a step.
Well, the whole talk after Pronax left was if Flusha could pick up the slack on the in-game leading, and we've actually got audio where of Flusha's kind of thoughts. This was in the middle of the Pro League matches, talking about the new roster.
It's working well for you guys because you've won two tournaments so far. How much better can you be once you've kind of worked on your map pool? Do you think you'll be better than Fnatic was in the past?
I have to say we will be better.
You hope so?
Like, I'm just in the start of my in-game leader role, so I'm just going to keep improving, and we're just going to teach Dennis how we play, because he's used to his old team where they were just mixing and a lot of random shit. So if we just get him into our team play more. And
so that was Flusha talking about it. And the scariest part about it is that they haven't, and their I don't know if it was their coach or statistics guy or whatever, the dude behind Fnatic.
He's their coach.
Okay, so their coach was talking.
He probably does statistics too, but he's their coach.
And said that Fnatic at this point, they're not even using strats. They're just trying to work on like peeking together and where people are going to be on the map, you know, at specific times of the game. It kind of makes you wonder how good they can be if they don't even have, you know, that setup stuff done yet. Well, like, they're just shooting people.
And here's my argument to that, though. It also makes you wonder, do you need strats to be a top team? If you can land your shots, you can win by just playing against the other team.
Yeah.
Playing off of them and using your position to your advantage. Say your strat is to, especially like if you're on defense, if you're on CT, you're kind of at the mercy on where the offense goes, right?
Yeah.
Like you can have a strat to cover B site, but if they go A, well, then that strat's kind of out the window and you have to react to what strat the offense is doing. That's the one thing with CSGO where if you're on defense, you're really, it's a reaction position, right? You're only worrying about where the offense goes. If they're coming down, you know, A on Dust 2 and they have two guys on long A, well, you really have to focus on what they're doing and try to look for the sweep around. But there's no strat there. It's what they're doing. It's what Fnatic is doing. It's landing your shots. It's reacting to what they're doing and kind of using it against them.
Yeah, it's whatever they're doing, it's working.
It's also, I think, because the coach also made a point a while back, but the key to their victory is also just having fun, where some people can confuse it to being a douche, Olafmeister. But, you know, I guess it's all in good fun when you want to run away on a knife round.
I think we've talked about this before. It's a lot easier to have fun when you're winning.
This is very true.
I guess we're not gonna know how it works until they start dropping games and seeing how they react to in the sports world, as they call it, adversity.
Yes, and it's also a lot more fun when you're not using strategies because then you're not upset they're not working.
Yeah. The whole psychological thing is gone.
If you're running strats and all of a sudden that strat's not working, your psyche is like, oh, what do we do? Like, that was our plan A and plan B, and that's gone now. And they are just reading us like a book when it's because you're telegraphing yourself like that. Overall, a really good tournament. ESL, again, they always put on a very nice production. The one thing I take away from this, I want parity in CSGO. I'm really tired of seeing Fnatic win. 2015 was a long year when it got to it, and it's like, wow. So we have Fnatic and Na'Vi, or, you know, it's the same five teams, and I get it, and that's what people want to watch, but I want some parity, right?
Well, it's just not there yet. The teams just...
I think maybe when you get a real league and some cap space or however they want to do it.
I mean, yeah, you look at the top five teams and all the finishes, and it's pretty much the same people just shuffled in a different order.
Yeah, every time. And honestly, the only reason it's even not as bad as before is because the way they force it to where in ESL, they have like their European teams versus, and they take people from NA scene.
Yeah, so and the Road to Vegas tournament's doing that too, doing a separate NA.
Because honestly, you have to do that or you will never see teams like Conquest in here.
Well, yeah, but the problem is you get to these things and Conquest goes... negative 33, their team goes negative 33 and 0-2 and they're gone. And it's just a free ride for Fnatic to the semifinals or, you know, however it happens to work out. And that's my problem with talking about an NA shuffle. Like, why are you going to shuffle the same players just to different teams? It's not working.
Because
you got to do something different.
Everybody is looking for that key player to their team and they think it's just one player away. With FNS leaving CLG, in my head, I have no idea if it would work out. In my head, I could see Shazam switching over and that working out really well for that team. I know CLG and Conquest I put CLG ahead of Conquest.
Yeah, I agree.
I know a recent play might have them more on an even level, but there was a time there where CLG was pretty consistent in being solid at tournaments and they kind of just hit a plateau. They hit that glass ceiling there, and they just couldn't break it. I think Shazam on CLG would at least be interesting, but there's no reason he would entertain that idea because I feel like he probably likes being on Conquest. I feel like Shazam probably likes being the poster boy for the team. So this tournament, though, it came right. I mean, right before a very, very big, crucial update to CSGO. That's where they added the R8 revolver. They messed up the rifle spray, which right before we recorded the show today, Valve announced that they are reverting back to the old ways and
all changes reverted. Ouch.
Like the patch never happened except for adding a new gun. And that got me thinking. We wanted to talk about the R8, and I was like, well, everybody does it. And at that time, by now, it's already patched. I want to talk about developers and their accountability, their responsibility, however you want to word it, to their respective professional game, to the competitive scene. Do developers feel any responsibility to kind of hold that integrity of the game? So you have games like, so in esports, let me get this off my chest. Esports is different than any other traditional sport in the sense of you could kind of say like who needs more who, right? Do the developers need esports or do esports need the developers? You can make an argument for both, right? You can play devil's advocate on both sides, I feel. Because Counter-Strike, as awesome as it's been and as, you know, it stood the test of time, being competitive definitely helps its case. And having a league and everything, like a skill gap and everything, I think definitely helps its case. You see that every time there's a big tournament, the players influx, right? More people play the games after tournaments. And that goes for any competitive game. When there's a big tournament, that game gets more people on it.
I think you can see that effect just by looking at some of the games that are being created today, like that are in development, and their entire marketing strategy is based on becoming a viable esport.
Yes, back in the day, games did not make, they made multiplayer to be fun and competitive for the sake of their own little bubble, but they never thought of, well, gee, we need to make this to be the next esport. We want this to be the next thing everybody's playing professionally. Developers didn't think about that at the time, and these games just happened to be good enough and balanced enough to where that's the way it morphed. Back to my point where, you know, who needs who more? If you look at traditional sports, football doesn't need Wilson, the people who actually make the football for the game. Football, the NFL doesn't need Wilson, right? If Wilson all of a sudden stopped making footballs or they didn't want to, I'm sure there's about a million other football makers out there that would easily step up and the NFL could design their own or whatever there. If Counter-Strike or Valve decides to change their game, there's very little ESL or anybody could do if Valve really wanted to stand their ground. Now, this one, they reverted back because the mass amounts of voices that went their way, emails, everything. I mean, I'm sure they saw a player dip because everybody hated this update. But it gets me thinking about not just Valve and Counter-Strike. I don't want to just focus on this update. But in general, I mean, look at the way esports influences games, right? You have things like Halo. Halo used to be like one of the most popular games out there in shooters, and now it's really taken a dip as far as that goes. But again, MLG definitely helped its image, right? And vice versa. MLG needed Halo at the time, and I think it ended up being where Halo almost needed MLG.
Yes, I've posted a lot about it and kind of thought about it a lot, like what makes something a viable esport. And the one thing that you come back to every single time is a community behind the game. So like Dota 2 defense, you know, was created off of a mod.
Counter-Strike
was created off of a mod. These games got so huge because the people that made them kind of made them as like a community project, not really thinking, man, I want the next shooter or I want the next, you know, they were making something they thought was fun and they enjoyed. That community built up so much over time that, you know, I think Valve could have stayed on this R8 update. It could have stayed their ground and left it the same. And in 2 months, everything would have been the same. Everything would have been just like it was before the update came out. I mean, not the game, but like everybody would have just kept watching it and kept playing it because there is such a community behind it and there's so many people that play it. And the pros, I mean, let's be honest, the pros aren't just going to walk away if they're still throwing money at tournaments for the stuff.
And it's something that you bring up there that got me thinking about saying the community kind of drives the esport, right? Or at least the game even.
Yeah.
Take esports out of it if a game needs a community. And it gets me thinking back to like Rainbow Six Vegas 2, where Ubisoft for a little bit there really, I mean, they worked hand in hand with MLG to design maps and everything for competitive play. They had maps with that was designed after a MLG convention where it had MLG all over
that
the
was,
map.
That was actually a super fun map too.
Right. And they had really good maps. I think it was called the Convention Center.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Now that I think about it. And so they were really partnered well with MLG. Well, the community in Rainbow, it was good, but it was, you know, compared to Halo or at the time Gears of War, it was definitely the third tier spectator sport at MLG, if you will. And it ended up getting dropped by MLG. And that was after Ubisoft, I felt, really put the effort into trying to make it as MLG friendly. I mean, you know, they worked with them. They wanted to be at MLG. So that's a case where it was the organization that kind of said, hey, we don't need you. Like, right. We really appreciate you supporting us and everything, but it's just not working out. So it's this delicate balance of, like, I feel like people like to bring up, they always like, oh, well, why aren't the pros talking to the developers? Well, it turns out that they really do, but the developers still went around and did this update.
Right.
So that brings up the case of, well, how much do the developers even care, right? I mean, everyone talks about, well, you want games to be competitive, but at the same time, you do need that casual player, right?
So I watched, I believe it was the World Games Conference or GDC, Game Developers Conference. And it was a guy talking about that worked on the Sony PlayStation Icon Brawler, their Smash Brothers knockoff, whatever it was called. I don't remember what it was called. But he worked as the metagame balance, like to balance the metagame out for what the players are saying and doing. And he was explaining how there's two different ways to go about it. You can go with the data that you see that you get from the game, or you can go from like community opinion, and like you'll see stuff that matches up, but then you'll see stuff that's just completely variable between the two. And he explains that you have to have a balance about of which one you go with. And like in this particular case, it seems like Valve just kind of went wholly onto the data portion and said, you know, everybody's using the AK and the M4 and we don't want them to do that anymore. So we're going to make the guns worse to force people to, you know, play something different.
Without ever asking.
Well, without ever considering that, you know, like.
They always ask if they could. They never stop to ask if they should.
Right. So like nobody really has a problem with the rifles. And I'm not saying the SG and the AUG in this patch, they're great guns. They're expensive, but they're good guns, right? For the game. But there's really not a need for them until you screw with the other rifles, which is the whole reason they did it. But it was based on data of like how often people play the certain rifles. And I mean, you can even look at it and say like, well, the reason everybody plays those rifles is because everybody's always played those rifles. Like the 1.6, 1.3, yeah, I mean, everybody used the M4 and the AK. So it might not even be that they're the better guns. It's just that everybody's so used to using them, they just used them. So, I mean, I just feel like there's all kinds of questions that Valve could have asked and never actually did.
And they did a very terrible job at damage control afterwards, like most of these places do. So I think, you know, at the end of the day, you ask yourself, you know, who needs who more? I think at this point, they both need each other, especially with the way developers are designing their games now to be the next big esport. I mean, look at Overwatch, right? Blizzard is solely building that game to be competitive.
And I really think they're going to be let down, but that's a whole nother
discussion. Look, I don't think it's going to fail because Blizzard has the backing for it. They're going to make big tournaments for it, but I agree. Anyways, and you get people who are like, well, you know, I play video games for casual. You know, that's fine if they made the rifles bad, blah, blah, blah. I don't play to be competitive. And here's my case against that. Since the dawn of video games, they were designed to be competitive. Whether or not you thought of it as professional or being a competitive gamer, I mean, look at Pong, right? One of the first video games ever had a scoreboard.
Yeah, I was going to say, anything that has a scoreboard is meant to be competitive.
Right. It's human nature to want to win when there's a score. Even if there's no reward, the reward is winning.
Right. Having your name at the top of the list. Yeah.
Even games like Mario and Donkey Kong, they had a high scoreboard. High score. No one cared if you were the mid score. You wanted to be the high score. So whether or not you look at Pong or Donkey Kong or Counter-Strike or League, all of this was designed to be competitive, and we're finally just making that very slow, very wide turn where worlds are colliding, right? Developers are realizing that they might also have to be working with these organizations, and the organizations, I think, are trying to find that delicate balance of where they can put their two cents in. Because at the same time, if you're ESL and Valve does these updates, or, you know, if you're anybody, I guess League has the beauty of that it is their league, so
they can do what they
that's
want,
a monopoly
right?
over there. But for these games that don't have their own leagues, I think you're seeing these organizations trying to test the waters to see how good a friendship they have with these developers.
Or how far they can push
yeah,
them.
Yeah, how far, you know, can you go in there and be like, hey, Gaben, it's me, ESL. I was just wondering, this R8, about that pistol. Can we not do that? Because I think one of the beauty things is that overall in Counter-Strike and overall in Dota and League, I think one of the things that make it so popular is that the default, for the most part, default settings is what they play competitive on, right?
Right.
Maybe mix up a few match times and everything like that, but for the most part, it's the same thing where before, like, when we played Rainbow competitive, I mean, those settings were nothing like...
I talked about that with Halo. Like, it's unfortunate that Valve is forcing the round timers, the round timer and bomb timer increase on people. But I had spoken about that with, especially with Halo, that you saw the entire competitive scene in Halo 2 split off from matchmaking entirely and did nothing but custom games because the
competitive
settings.
That's another instance, yeah. though, where the developer recognized the professional scene enough. They recognized it as its own entity that is big enough to where they actually added a playlist that wasn't called, you know, Slayer whatever. It was MLG Slayer. Like, they had MLG coded into the game.
Well, they had Slayer Pro for a while, or Team Objective
Pro.
Yeah,
but then they ditched it because even Slayer Pro was a little different.
Well, yeah, they still tried to keep, like, they still tweaked what they thought was better.
Right,
but.
And then they finally bent the knee and was like, okay, this is MLG's playlist right there. So you had Bungie completely recognize it and all of this stuff where I felt like they, you know, maybe they weren't on the same page of friendship because once Halo kind of lost its thunder, you saw the same thing, right? MLG kind of went on the wayside as Halo did.
Well, once Halo changed over developers, I mean, that whole relationship was kind of squashed, it seems like. And I'm sure Microsoft doesn't like being pushed around ever. And it's their baby. Well, it's their cash cow. I mean, anyway, I don't know.
It's a really interesting discussion that I would love to.
I'm honestly waiting for the day. On. I'm waiting for the day that one of these tournament organizers, like ESL, because I imagine they're the only ones that have the kind of financial backing to do it, creates their own game.
And that would be the only way where you see that, right? Because even if they do create their own league, even if, say, ESL or this new Turner League becomes the E-League, becomes like the NFL of esports, they are still at the beck and call of these random patches.
Yeah.
That developers decide to put in.
Yep.
They have no say on, you know, I guess, yeah, the settings, but if you are banning and changing so much of the professional scene settings that are going to be so different, if you're running on four patches in the past compared to where we're at now, like, that's where you're going to get that discrepancy of fans playing the game and the professional scene.
Right.
So it's an ongoing one. I'd love to hear from everyone there. If you want, hit me up on Twitter at Pirate Mushroom or the show at The Center Ring. We'd love to hear your thoughts on kind of that, the deeper look, right? That was kind of a deeper discussion on there. So we talked a little bit how Valve kind of, for a little bit, it seemed, gave the middle finger to Counter-Strike, talking about the same company, different game, where the community basically loves Valve, and that's Dota 2, and they just had a big tournament, the Summit 4.
Yeah, the whole Dota 2. So Dota 2 has been really crazy anticipating
the update.
And the patch finally dropped like an hour ago, an hour and a half ago.
Is this the source 2?
6.8.
Okay.
6, I think. I believe. Anyway, so the Dota 2 patch dropped, and essentially everybody's just going crazy for it. That just gives you the dichotomy between the two Valve communities. But I also hear that the Valve community that covers Dota 2, they put a lot more effort into like getting feedback and stuff.
Well, the fact that they even knew a patch was on its way tells you everything.
Oh, they've been talking about it for months. Counter-Strike
doesn't even let you know when there's a patch on the way, and it just pops up.
Well, that was like the revert patch. I was like,
they try to act like it's a surprise. Like, hey, these kids are going to love this new revolver. And then no, we didn't.
So the Summit 4 just wrapped up on the 13th, 2 days ago. And the Summit 4 is a tournament that's not really like any other tournaments. The teams get together in a house, like an actual, it's more like a mansion from what I saw from the videos I saw. It's like, it's huge. And they all just kind of hang out. Like tables set up in bedrooms with computers on it. And
it's very big house, like the big house tournament for, you know, Super Smash Brothers. It's that same very community feel driven tournament. It's very not your stadium arena style.
And the teams and stuff do all the casting. Like, there'll be a host or whatever. And by host, I mean, there'll be a guy sitting on a couch with no shoes on. Like, I swear I didn't see a pair of shoes the entire time I was watching. And they all just hang out, watch the games and kind of cast kind of this loose casual thing. And it's pretty interesting. Actually, it was a unique kind of way to watch it. Obviously you can't have a whole lot of people. I mean, you can't have any viewers there, live audience or anything, which I'm sure the pros love because they don't have to worry about being anywhere or doing anything. They can just, you know, hang out. The prize pool as well was a lot smaller. It was only $100,000 and then, crowdfunded,
which is the new thing now,
which I hate, by the way. I don't know why they're putting the onus on these prize pools on the viewers. Like, why are you?
I've stressed my opinion on that too. It's not that I'm against it. I just don't like it.
Yeah, I'm all for it. And well, the thing that bothers me, and we talked about this briefly before the show started, they charged $4 for the TV ticket, and only $1 of that actually went to the prize pool. If you look at the prize pool, it ended up being something like $114,886. So $115,000, $15,000 of it was raised through the TV ticket price.
Essentially 15,000 tickets, right?
Yeah, 15,000 tickets sold at $4 a piece. Valve pocketed, this is, you know, napkin math, $45,000 off those TV ticket prices, and it only gave them 15 of the total 60. Anyway, I don't like crowdfunded prize pools. However, this prize pool that was actually kind of small, a lot of the players were talking about how much they enjoyed the tournament because it was really loose and kind of casual and easy to do. Like, there was not any like serious money on the line. PPD actually released a video kind of talking again about the tournament setup for the Summit 4. If we could, just go ahead and play that real quick.
And the first pro that I liked about the Summit was the new house that they hosted the tournament in. The house was much bigger. It was in a much more private, secluded area. There was a lot more room for players and everyone to move around. There was plenty of practice area. There was plenty of room to sit and eat if you wanted to.
And I guess with the house and the prize pool involved, this is kind of like what I feel like pro players want an all-star game to be. Like, if you think about professional sports now, like, they just want a place where they can relax, they play, kind of have fun, and there's a little bit of money on the line. Very positive.
And I wonder, as far as they probably want to win, but just being in a house in that setting, their stress levels are probably lower than what it would be in the middle of a giant arena with a couple, you know, 30,000 people watching you. Yeah. So I'm sure it's a completely different feel. So who ended up winning this one then? EG, right?
So Evil Geniuses took first place. They actually had to do a reverse sweep in the finals. It was a best of five against Virtus Pro. And Virtus Pro actually worked their way all. They lost the first round of the quarterfinals and had to climb all the way back through the loser's bracket to get to the finals, win the first two games, and then get swept three straight. brutal way to lose the tournament. Fun fact, with EG winning that, they've now won more over the last 2 years. They've won more international events than any other NA teams in any game. EG is the only hope for North American esports.
They are the, as far as international play goes.
International play, yeah.
Home soil. I feel like Optic Gaming might have something to say about that.
Yeah, well, Optic Gaming is, you consider Call of Duty one of the big esports? I guess it is.
They did win esports team of the year, sir.
That's true.
Fan voted.
EG ended up taking home just shy of $50,000 for that first place finish, which is kind of chump change, I guess, in the world of Dota.
It seems like we said, though, it's the style of tournament, right? Summit is one of those unique tournaments, I feel, that compared to everything else, it's like you said, the pros probably actually like going there.
Yeah.
And they've even announced that they're having a fifth and sixth.
Yeah, but immediately after the tournament, they released a video saying they've already got Summit 5 and 6 coming up. So it's around to stay. It's an interesting format. And hopefully Evil Geniuses can keep up the North American dream for us.
Hopefully. We'll see. No one else is going to do it in any other esports. So there you go. Summit 4, Dota 2 talk, huh? How about that? Let's get on to this micro here since we are almost running out on time, man. We just, so much for thinking an hour was going to be a struggle, right? We started this whole podcast thinking an hour would be tough, and now it's tough to contain it all in an hour. I'll let you go first since it looks like you have a pretty full plate as far as micro goes.
All right, I'm going to drop this on you because I know I told you I was going to tell you something exciting.
Yes, you teased this before we started recording.
Gamers Paradise, G2 has now released a statement that Gamers Paradise told them they're not paying out.
Wow, so for those who might not remember or don't know, Gamer Paradise was a CSGO tournament. Dota 2 was even there.
Dota 2
was supposed to be there and got completely canceled out after pros have already arrived at the tournament. The CSGO tournament was very shakenly done, and some teams were able, they had visa issues, they had law enforcement get involved. It was a mess. This was, back in...
I think we talked about it on like episode 2 or 3.
Yeah, so it had to have been...
Four or five months ago.
So, wow, time flies by. And it was a whole controversy, and they even announced that they were going to do another one next year, but they were going to basically, they signed a contract that was within 90 days, so 3 months, they were going to pay the winnings to the teams that deserve the prize
that finished. Yeah, we will finish our games if you promise to pay out. We don't care about anything else. We'll finish the games.
We don't need the money by next week or anything. Yeah. We just want to play.
And they told G2 that there was no assets held over. Gamers Paradise held no assets over, and if they were to be taken to court, would immediately declare bankruptcy, and they wouldn't see any money anyway. So what does that
mean? No assets held over, meaning we don't have any money to give you?
They're broke, yeah.
So
they say they're broke. If they do end up putting on another tournament, you better believe there's going to be some litigation coming out.
At that point, they can't. There's no way a professional team is going to go to a tournament that openly had as much issues as they did, where their computers got stolen, and then have no prize money, make the promise, a signed contract saying that we will pay you, and then tell you they're not going to pay you and say, by the way, you can't even sue us because we don't even have the money. Like,
yeah.
You know what, though? At that point, just to prove something, out of principle, I would sue their ass. I would sue them and say, have fun in bankruptcy.
Yeah, that's...
You deal with the paperwork of bankruptcy because...
And G2, that one that ended up winning that tournament and was owed, I think they said somewhere in the $30,000 range, said that they are, especially for some of the other teams, are going to continue pursuing it to
absolutely
make them honor the contract.
You, they broke one contract, right? They broke one contract by not paying them in the first place. So right. They signed another contract saying we'll pay you in 90 days. So they broke that contract. That's two contracts you broke. Yeah. You deserve to be bankrupt.
See, I knew this would get a rise. I was so happy I didn't tell
at
you
that,
beforehand.
Yeah, no, at that point, you deserve to be bankrupt and be miserable because that's ridiculous. You're grown-ass adults hosting a tournament and toning yourself as CEO. Like, you, this is responsibility that you probably should have been able to handle beforehand.
Yeah, it's a bad story all around.
you feel at the end of the day, you feel sorry for the players who are still having to deal with that.
Well, hopefully the players, I mean, I'm upset that the players didn't get paid because all that prize money typically goes to the players. But I'm hoping that the organization's the one feeling the headache as far as dealing with them goes. Hopefully the players aren't the ones trying to call them up.
What a mess. And I'm sure that's probably won't be the end of it.
Because no, definitely not.
I'm going to have to keep an eye on it because they said that they are going to host another tournament, which would be baffling.
They're going. There's absolutely no way they can do it under Gamers Paradise. They're going to have to make another organization and hope nobody connects the dots.
Right. Yeah. You're going to hide from the internet that you are the POS organization that
calling it now. That's Richard Lewis's next story broken.
Yeah, Richard Lewis, get on this. Investigative journalism, Richard Lewis. We need to get that in there. What else do you got for the micro?
We already talked about the Dota 2 patch. Heroes of the Storm also released a patch, including a new hero. I'm just going to run through all mine real quick. ESL 1, Battlefield 4 Champions, Epsilon Gaming. That game is awful to watch on stream, by the way. Battlefield 4, way too much stuff going on the screen. Hi-Rez announced a $100,000 Founders Tournament for Paladins.
That's your game, right? That's your baby that you play in beta.
Well, I do enjoy the game. I don't find it all that competitive.
Well, we'll see, though. We'll see. But the Founders Tournament, right?
Yep. And
again, you might not think it's competitive because you never see people who play it competitively, right?
Oh, that's very true. I mean, I've only played... At this point, all you can play is random teammates with random cards. They're releasing the constructed... play style, which is where you actually build a deck of cards for your characters and stuff. So we'll see where it goes from there. I'm definitely interested in playing it though. Finally, a 17-year-old Norwegian boy was arrested for cyber crimes for using a Trojan horse on people's computers to log in and steal their Counter-Strike Go skins.
Womp womp. 17 years old. So that's the jackass that makes me have to type in a code every time I want to log into Steam on now.
Mobile authenticator. Yes,
that's why I need a mobile authenticator now. Thanks a lot, asshole. So my only contribution to the micro today, I did not get that much. EA is opening up their competitive gaming division. That is the actual name is CGD, the competitive gaming division of EA. So far, some teasers. They have FIFA, Madden NFL, obviously, and Battlefield and more. So you watched the Battlefield tournament. Well, now EA will actually be hosting probably some tournaments or at least having a competitive gaming division. Don't really know what that means.
It means they're going to do the same stuff like the Hi-Rez thing. Like they're going to start trying to push their games into esports.
And this is what... So I have an issue with this, right? So last week I said that I actually really liked Activision's World League for Call of Duty. Like I felt like they took it very serious and took it to the next level as far as making it look really professional, right? And Riot does it with League and that's fine. Developers can have their own leagues. I don't think every developer though should make their own league for their game. Like that's just getting too much, right? Like we don't need so much walls being built in the sense of you're going to run these mom and pop, quote unquote, organizations out like ESL and such, where they're just going to get absorbed and EA will use, this is hypothetical talk, ESL as their team.
You know, ESL's not going to be upset about that, though. ESL's still getting paid to do the tournaments, right?
And I agree, but if ESL completely goes out of the way and EA just hires all of them, you know what I'm saying? Then you have the hands of the man.
They call it the acquisition by hire, where you just hire away everybody that works for your competitor.
Exactly. And especially like for a world like this where it's more contract based in esports production.
Or like where 90% of the people aren't even paid.
Yes. Yeah, right. Just volunteers. You don't even have to pay people, EA. Which seems right up EA's alley of not paying people.
Just go ahead and put up at esportscareers.org, volunteer positions. EA, you will have people clawing to get in your doors.
So, I don't know. Look, everybody has their opinions on EA to begin with. I don't like this idea of being competitive. I don't think, sports games and esports do not blend. I understand you have tournaments for Madden, And that's great. It's cool. Whatever. I'm not here to rain on their parade. But to call that an esport, now that I laugh at, right? That's one of those things where, so you're a professional Madden player? Which is probably very hypocritical of me to laugh at people who play sports games competitively. But I just don't get it.
I don't find the competitive factor in it myself.
No, I would never... Maybe
it's because you can easily watch real football that esports football probably doesn't seem quite as entertaining. Possibly.
That probably has something to do with it. Like, I'm never going to watch a Madden game online with the same excitement of actually a real NFL game.
Right.
So, I guess that's why it's called the competitive gaming division, right? It's good technically luck, not esports or anything like that, but yeah. I mean, EA has the money to back it up, so it's going to last. EA has the money to back it up.
Maybe I can send them the email and tell them that Battlefield 4 has got too much garbage all over the screen. You can't see anything.
Well, and maybe that's something then with an esports division where they'll actually focus. Because Battlefield was never, it was, it's a massive game.
Right.
Maybe now they'll reel it in a little bit now that they have an esports division to try to do that. But again, I think this is just a sad attempt on cashing in on the esports wave of trend that is happening right now.
Right.
Everybody's trying to get on this while you can. And I said it before, all it takes is one millionaire to pay attention to it. And every other millionaire is like, hey,
there was actually there was a bunch of talk about that with MTG investing in like DreamHack and ESL and all that stuff. Like having those big investments has made all these other people that are like, hey, I've got money to blow.
Well, that's like EA's been around forever. Madden has been around forever. All these games have been around forever for EA. Why now are you all of a sudden thinking like, hey, maybe we should brand this and keep it in-house to make our own money?
Yeah. Good luck,
it's,
EA.
It's bullshit, and I don't like it, and I don't like EA.
I don't like it.
And that's my story. I'm sticking to it. Well, that will just about do it for episode 13 of TCR, The Center Ring, your professional gaming podcast. That came live to you pre-recorded from an undisclosed location. I don't know if I said that in the intro.
No, you switched it. I like it.
So there you go. Again, my name is Tim. You can always find me on the Twitter at Pirate Mushroom. You can follow Brandon at Brand TCR.
Brand Any New.
Brand Dude, Any New.
You follow me.
I don't mean I've listened to you. So you can follow him at Brand Any New. We also have Twitch accounts. The show is on Twitter at The Center Ring. Follow the show. That gets you all the latest updates on the show, like if we are late a day for whatever personal reasons that we need to take off a day. You can interact with us there. We are always keeping an eye on it. The YouTube will be up shortly. We want to get that up here probably starting in the new year is when we'll actually like gain real focus on it. Because apparently you can put a 2-minute video up on YouTube and have 600 subscribers. So that's where the money's at, apparently. So, again, thank you so much for listening to The Center Ring. Episode 13 is in the books. We'll be back next week with tons and tons of more discussion points. And I hope you're here to enjoy every minute of it. Again, thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.